I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in Tennessee for a conversation with Sharon and Mark Oldham. They're the owners of Dancing Bear Lodge, who also visit with their award-winning chef, Shelley Cooper. Located in the Great Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee, Dancing Bear is an ideal destination for those seeking tranquility and getting away from it all. The Oldhams traded in corporate life in Nashville for a second incarnation as the owners of Dancing Bear Lodge, their on-site Appalachian Bistro and Event Center, where live music performances feature outstanding regional artists. Sharon and Mark Oldham. You have a whole new incarnation in your lives, 2014.
Yes, 2014, we moved from Nashville to Townsend, Tennessee.
What's your background before that? You were in hospitality?
Yes, I was a vendor for 25 years with a company that provided in-room guest directories and lobby business centers for hotels and lodging properties really across the world. And so we knew we wanted to be in hospitality once that chapter ended.
Your life made a major shift, didn't it?
It did. We went from living in a city that was exploding, Nashville, to a much more slow-paced lifestyle.
Way much more.
Yes, but we are always busy, thinking of new things, what's the best next step for the property.
Right. I would just say also that we're the only people that we know that we're moving out of Nashville, Tennessee.
Everybody else was moving in.
As Sharon said, everybody was moving in. People in Nashville love it, and it's a really booming economy, and they've got a lot of great things happening down there. So it's great for them, but it's also great for us because we were ready to do something different, and so here we are.
We do enjoy going back to visit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Here we are up in the mountains, the Great Smoky Mountains, and talk to us about your major shift in your lives here at this resort, Country Inn.
First off, we have a great management staff, great people who work for us. So we kind of just sort of oversee the whole thing.
Well, you're lucky. You know that, don't you?
Oh, very lucky. People wonder how we take a vacation, and we do. You know, we have ideas. They have ideas. We all work together to implement them.
I would just say it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were in the regular routine of the 9-to-5 world in a city, that's sort of what it was, you know, raising kids, this, that, and the other. Now it's like we get up and it's not really a job anymore. It's a lifestyle. We enjoy the interaction with guests. We enjoy the staff. The staff meetings really don't seem like meetings. I mean, they are.
Stay on point, but you have a good time doing it.
Yes. I'm dressed right now in jeans and a short sleeve shirt, and Sharon's got a very casual dress on. It's not like that if it were a corporate job, a corporate environment. You're right. It's definitely a different lifestyle change. 2014 was when we came up here, and so we're a 38-acre property, depending on how you count it. And Sharon is involved with the outside. She does the gardening. She does the landscaping. She does everything that has to do with anything regarding outside of the cabins. And I'm more the paper pusher kind of guy.
Give us a word picture of the property. What is here? What did somebody experience? What kind of atmosphere are you striving for?
Peaceful.
Serene.
Serene.
Relaxed.
Yes.
Mountains and trees.
Our guests come, and even though we're 35 minutes from Knoxville, which is our closest city, it's like, wow. We come, we're relaxed. It's like we've left the real world.
So we like to say we're 30 minutes from Knoxville, but we're worlds away. You asked about what it is we're trying to strive. It's just, we deliberately did not build that lodge back that burned to the ground in 2013 because we wanted people outside. They stay in accommodations. I use that word purposely. When you say the words cabins, the connotation of, well, do I need to bring my own sheets, pots, and pans comes up. And so we treat this as a hotel. You have daily housekeeping. You've got
Wi-Fi,
HD, TV.
HDTV, you've
got Wi-Fi, hot tubs, fireplaces. Mm-hmm. And you got to walk to the bistro at night.
You know, I would describe your accommodations as maybe lodge-style casita. Because they're like little lodgettes.
It's rustic. It's laid back. People sit on the decks, read books, get in the hot tub. Some people come here and never, ever go to the national park. Mm-hmm.
And then after dinner, they'll sit by our fire pit, which is a very large fire pit. We have s'mores at night. and just enjoy the evening after what Sharon was describing as their day. And so they are casitas, to your point, and they are lodges, which is why we kept the name Dancing Bear Lodge. We kept the word lodge in, even though there's not
a grand lodge.
Yes, exactly. Yes. The whole thought process was, let's do weddings, let's do events, and let's just keep it outdoorsy.
We never have recreated what was here, and so we didn't even try.
Yeah. Okay, so you have overnight accommodations. There are 26 different units?
There'll be 26 when we finish the construction going on right now, yes.
And they're close.
They're very close.
They're very close,
July 1st.
Yeah. Overnight, the rack rate or posted rate would start from a base.
Seasonal, so go as high as 300 a night.
Low season or shoulder?
150.
So that's a good value. And that's a bed and breakfast, basically?
You get breakfast in your room, mm-hmm. Greek yogurt, fresh fruit, our house-made granola, orange juice, coffee.
So lunch and dinner, what does somebody do?
For dinner, the Dancing Bear Appalachian Bistro is open 5 to 9. The world-class chef, Shelley Cooper, is in charge of the cuisine, and we have people come far and wide, and not just lodge guests. It's open to the public. Lunch is up in the air. We have Apple Valley next door. Apple Valley is a complex at the base of the Dancing Bear Hill, two retail stores, a cafe, and it's a great little lunch spot. That's where we try to steer guests. So just the out and about for lunch.
Right. And a lot of our accommodations do have full kitchens. So mm-hmm.
Do you find people that just kind of hunker down and don't go anywhere?
If it's a family, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to bring your breakfast, your lunch, and you're probably going to go out for dinner.
Sure.
But there are other places in Townsend to have lunch and such.
And it's a different world. You guys haven't been here that long, and yet you're already drawing people from Europe and around the world thanks to the World Wide Web. Yeah. Tell us about that story.
The World Wide Web definitely helps everybody.
Yeah. Yes. Well, as we were talking about, Sharon is sort of the outdoor guru and handles a lot of the way the place looks. So I try to work with online travel agents and our staff works, you know, the Expedias of the world and the Travelocities and the Pricelines. And so we try to get us out there, you know, SEO marketing and Google and all that good stuff. So that helps us, actually. We put it out there, what we are, and if you like us, great, come see us.
Is TripAdvisor a value? Does that work for you?
Yes, TripAdvisor is huge.
Sharon gets mad at me because I wake up every morning and I go to TripAdvisor. Every morning, and I go to Urban Spinner, I go to Yelp, but TripAdvisor, for some reason, has become the standard, the gold standard of review sites. We definitely pay attention to TripAdvisor, and
you respond and you will communicate back.
Absolutely, yeah. You've got Absolutely. To. Talking about playing the game, if you ignore a TripAdvisor review, and or if you or one doesn't pay heed to what people are saying, I've found that people generally speak the truth, and they will review you honestly. Now, there are those people who just get a burr and give you a one star for whatever reason, and you sort of discount those. But TripAdvisor is absolutely, you can get me going on this topic.
No, it is fascinating. It's our new world, and it's what we have to do to figure out and make it.
I remember when TripAdvisor started, the late 90s, we had a site called Online City Guide. com, and we would watch what they were doing at TripAdvisor, and they were started as a small business. Two or three people would post reviews, and by golly, they caught fire, and look where they are now. So I give all credit to TripAdvisor becoming what they are today. And you're right, it is where we live now. People are all of a sudden critics, and if you think about it from a broad range, some people give TripAdvisor a lot of grief because, again, they can post reviews that are not as fair, but I think whatever they've done, whatever algorithm they have to justify their reviews are well done.
Luckily, and credit to our staff and Shelley and everybody here, most of ours are fours and fives.
Here's what we've also found is that TripAdvisor typically is 50 and up, and Urban Spoon is typically 25 and down, and Yelp is somewhere in the millennials, you know, and so that's sort of the territory they've marked out for each other.
Interesting. It really is, because Yelp is a very distinctly different place to go.
Isn't it?
So different.
And I don't know if people realize that the way we do inside the business. You as a journalist, because you cover the travel industry, I guess understand that. But it's become increasingly clear to us how different Yelpers are.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more.
Well, we have great things in store. We're working on some events on our lawn this summer with
live music.
Live music.
And tell us a little bit more with the live music, because you're focusing on regional, local musicians live.
Yes. And we would love to get into some more nationally known
acts,
music,
yeah.
But
for sure. But I think there's nothing cooler than shining a spotlight on this local talent, which is extraordinary.
There's so much local talent.
So we love music and we love entertaining generally, and we've got a beautiful vet lawn that we're looking at. It's behind you, and a great stage. We intentionally powered it up with enough power, electricity, so that we could have loud music if we wanted to, or get back to the acoustic sets. And so the Appalachian theme that we have here at Dancing Bear Lodge and Appalachian Bistro comes through with this whole new genre of alternative slash Americana. And Americana is a big term these days in the music business. And our goal is to have a festival here in Townsend, a music festival.
But a lot of people think of Appalachian as, you know, as fiddle.
Corn dogs. And
yeah.
Gut buckets.
And it is a whole...
It's changing.
It's changing. So progressing.
Yep, love it.
So our executive chef is world-class, world-renowned. She's cooked all over the world, from New Zealand, here in the States, out in California, Florida. However, her roots are in Mississippi Delta, West Tennessee, and she cooked for her grandmom in North Carolina, so she's rooted in Appalachia. So it's my pleasure to introduce a chef who has just recently been featured in the James Beard Award-winning cookbook called Vittles by Ronnie Lundy. And Shelley Cooper is here with us today.
Hi.
Hey there.
Tell us about the essence of your philosophy of cuisine and culinary world.
Well, I believe that we all go through different chapters of life. 15 years ago, 10 years ago, this chapter would not have worked. My innate passion, love of food, where it comes from, came out of the womb. Curious as can be. I can remember I would eat things until, honestly, I got sick. I would have pleasure in my mouth and would just overdo it. I would put things in my mouth that I remember getting a spanking because it was poisonous and I didn't know that. It was just pretty and I wanted to taste it. Mm-hmm. Anything and everything that pertained to food, as I got a little older and could understand about digging in the earth, thus became a potato, and how you picked an apple and the next morning you had applesauce, or hours later you had apple butter. It fascinated me, and anything and everything that I could in my life pull back to a relation to food, I always did that. I was the kid that loved food, and so you could bribe me with food. If I was misbehaving, if you told me you were going to give me, you know, one of those big soft pretzels, I would start acting right. If you told me that you had some watermelon, I would start acting right. I was that kid. So food was my kryptonite always. When I first started to learn to read, I was reading cookbooks. It wasn't coloring books, or my ancestors created so much beauty that I was able to ingest. And it wasn't about anything other than the simplicity of taking something that they had grown or they had bought from the farmer's market. And with the most simplistic manipulation, it started with the core of it was having a beautiful product. And they had such pride. It wasn't about doing fussy sauces or glamorous plating. It was about having the most beautiful apple to make the applesauce, or the most beautiful pork belly to make the great bacon.
Truly, literally is, the food speaks for itself on the plate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always.
Yes.
And paying homage to the fact that whoever that farmer was, whoever that rancher was, the amount of time and effort it takes to raise a cow into the point it goes to slaughter, or a potato, or a tomato, whatever that may be, someone has spent an enormous amount of time and effort putting love onto that.
Jump forward, only because we're tight on time.
Okay.
jump rope? This is fascinating.
I'll talk forever.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say.
You get me started.
Yeah, no, I know.
And I have a little juice in me right now. I'll go forever.
Yeah. Now you have this ideal fruit or vegetable or whatever it is, and it's now in your kitchen.
Right.
How do you treat it, and how do you send it out?
So first of all, taste everything right off the get-go, because sometimes those little radishes, they might look like they're sweet and delicious, and then they are a fireball. Mm-hmm. And I might have this idea of what I'm going to do with it, and it doesn't necessarily work because they're just, you know, they're like the teenager that has its own personality. So once I taste the product and then looking at what all else we have involved in the kitchen as far as seasonality, that's how the dish starts to mature and grow a life of its own. There's always one star of the show. There's always one particular ingredient. For example, with your dinner tonight, the trout was the star of the show. The supporting actors were those gorgeous potatoes and the slaw. Your rabbit was the star of the show. The supporting actors were the collards and the dirty rice. And then it becomes of complementing as opposed to competing.
And there really wasn't any garnishing. There wasn't any.
There's no need for that fussiness and BS. Mm-hmm. Because if you pay proper respect and homage, I relate it to human beings. If you give it the proper tools and support, it's going to be able to go out into the adult world, support itself, and give back to the world. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, it's constantly going to need a sauce, a gravy, a garnish, a bunch of BS around it to make it be okay and to get it through life. But if you have this beautiful core product that's natural and clean, then you don't need all that business. To the core of me, again, that goes back to like me out of the womb. I did not understand that you could buy spaghetti sauce until I had gone to spend a night at one of my friend's house. And I was about 12 years old and I saw her mother open a can of Ragu spaghetti sauce. And the next day I went home and I told my mother as though I had been mistreated. My mother was like, well, it's okay. Not everybody eats like we do. But that had never been introduced to me, that everybody didn't make everything from scratch. Yeah, it's just innately in me. So right now with this whole very popularity of foodieism and farm-to-tableism and all this, I mean, these are words that I just feel like are so saturated in bastardism of, no, if, like, this is the way we came from our history to eat.
Literally how you grew up.
And I don't know any different. Right. So when this whole movement right now, which I'm super grateful for, because I do feel like it's giving attention, but it's gotten so glamorous and silly when we never should have gotten away from that, other than the Industrial Revolution and us, you know, farmer people, you know, lived off the land.
Shelley, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. You're so very welcome.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tennessee.
The underbed music, Whistling Asheville Blues, was performed by five-time Grammy Award-winning North Carolina musician David Holt.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.